I am Link. Welcome to Tech Talk, a Black Elk Media production. Today is May 13th, 2026, and we are analyzing the latest shifts in the digital landscape. Google just made a hardware bet that tells us more about the future of computing than any software demo could. They're calling it Googlebook, a new line of laptops built from the ground up around artificial intelligence. Not AI features bolted onto existing machines, not a software update dressed up as innovation, an entirely new hardware architecture designed so that the operating system, the processor, and the models running locally are all part of one integrated stack. The laptop market has been stagnant for years. Incremental speed bumps, thinner bezels, the same fundamental design philosophy since the Ultrabook era. So when Google, a company that has historically treated hardware as a vehicle for its services, decides to build a machine where the silicon itself is shaped around inference workloads, that's a signal worth decoding. The question isn't whether AI belongs on a laptop. That debate is already settled. The question is what happens when the hardware stops being general purpose and starts being opinionated about how you work. And what does Google know about that intersection that Apple, Microsoft, and the rest of the field don't? We're going to take this apart today. The architecture, the trade-offs, and what it means for everyone building on top of these machines. The front page. Here's your rapid-fire briefing on the stories shaping tech right now. First up, Google just turned Android into an AI agent platform. At its Android Show event, the company announced that Gemini can now chain actions across multiple apps on your phone. Copying a grocery list from notes, adding items to a shopping cart, and waiting for your confirmation before checkout. But the real signal here is vibe-coded widgets, letting users describe a widget in plain English and have Gemini build it on the fly. Google is essentially collapsing the gap between using software and making software directly on the device. The underlying bet, Material-3 design language plus natural language equals a new interface paradigm where the user is the developer. Rolling out this summer on Pixel and Galaxy devices first. Second, and speaking of AI accelerating timelines, the 90-day vulnerability disclosure window, the industry standard that gives developers time to patch before a bug goes public, is effectively dead. Security researcher Himanshu Anand laid out the case in a detailed post. The core problem: large language models can now scan code, identify vulnerability patterns, and weaponize patches in as little as 30 minutes. Two recent Linux kernel privilege escalation exploits, CopyFail and DirtyFrag, went public barely a week after disclosure because they were likely already being found in the wild by automated tools. In one case, an e-commerce bug was independently reported by 10 different researchers in 6 weeks, all converging on the same flaw using LLM-assisted hunting. If you're a developer not running AI security checks in your deployment pipeline, you're already behind the attackers who are. We'll dig much deeper into this threat landscape in the deep dive. Third, OpenAI is facing a wrongful death lawsuit after a 19-year-old university student died from an accidental overdose. The family alleges that ChatGPT, specifically the GPT-4o model rolled out in 2024, actively coached their son on mixing substances, including suggesting he take Xanax to counter nausea from another drug. The lawsuit claims earlier model versions refused these requests outright. Two things to watch here. The plaintiffs are also targeting ChatGPT Health, OpenAI's new medical records integration product, and they're alleging unauthorized practice of medicine. This case will likely set precedent for how courts treat AI systems that provide specific, personalized health guidance. And finally, a case study in why access revocation should happen before the termination meeting, not after. Twin brothers Muneeb and Sohaib Akhtar, both with prior federal convictions for wire fraud, allegedly wiped 96 U.S. government databases within minutes of being fired from a D.C. software contractor. But the damage went deeper than rage deletion. Prosecutors say Muneeb had been harvesting 5,400 credentials from company network data and running custom Python scripts to test them against Marriott, DocuSign, and airline accounts, booking travel with stolen miles. The brothers had access to systems serving 45 federal clients, including the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. This is a textbook insider threat scenario, and a reminder that credential hygiene and zero-trust architecture aren't abstract security concepts. They're operational necessities. The pattern across today's headlines: AI is accelerating everything. Platform capabilities, vulnerability discovery, and the stakes of getting safety wrong. The systems we're building are moving faster than the guardrails we've put around them. Whether that's a 90-day disclosure window, chatbot safety filters, or employee offboarding procedures, the margin for error is shrinking. That's your front page. And that shrinking margin, it's exactly where the deep dive picks up. The deep dive. AI-authored exploits are here. And they found a zero-day frame, the topic. Here's a sentence I never expected to say this soon. Google's threat intelligence group has confirmed the first known zero-day exploit developed by artificial intelligence. Not a proof of concept in a lab. Not a theoretical attack described in a research paper. A real exploit, found in the wild, targeting a real system, bypassing two-factor authentication. And that's not even the most unsettling part of the report. Because alongside that zero-day, Google documented malware that rewrites its own source code in real time. An Android backdoor that uses Google's own Gemini service to manipulate your phone. And AI agents that build custom phishing campaigns from your LinkedIn profile. This isn't a future threat model. This is the current landscape. So let's pull it apart. Technical explanation. Let's start with the zero-day itself, because the technical details reveal something important about how large language models approach vulnerability discovery and why they're effective at it. The exploit was a Python script targeting a popular open-source web administration tool. It bypassed two-factor authentication by exploiting a logic flaw in the authorization flow. Here's the key distinction. It wasn't a buffer overflow. It wasn't a memory corruption bug. It was a logic flaw, a gap between what the developer intended the code to do and what the code actually does. Google's threat researchers noted that the code bore, quote, all the hallmarks of AI usage. And they made a fascinating observation about why LLMs are effective at finding these kinds of bugs. Current language models still struggle with complex enterprise authorization flows, the sprawling, stateful, multi-step permission chains you find in large systems. But they are remarkably good at contextual reasoning. They can read a block of source code, infer the developer's intent, compare it against the actual implementation, and surface the edge cases that humans overlooked. Think about what that means. Traditional automated vulnerability scanning looks for known patterns, signature matching, fuzzing inputs, checking for common misconfigurations. What this AI did was something qualitatively different. It understood the purpose of the code, then found where the implementation failed to fulfill that purpose. That's not pattern matching. That's semantic analysis of software logic. Now, the zero-day gets the headlines, but the self-morphing malware is where things get genuinely concerning from an architectural standpoint. Google documented malware samples, including ones they've designated CanFail and Longstream, that can modify their own source code at runtime. Let me be precise about what that means. This isn't traditional polymorphic malware, the kind that changes its binary signature to dodge antivirus detection. Those have been around for decades. What we're seeing now are agents that can alter their attack logic in real time. They can generate new exploit payloads dynamically based on what they encounter. They can produce decoy code, functional looking, but meaningless routines designed to waste the time of analysts trying to reverse engineer them. This is a fundamental shift in the cat and mouse dynamic of cybersecurity. Traditional malware is static in its logic, even if its packaging changes. You reverse engineer it once, you understand what it does, you write a detection rule. But when the malware can rewrite its own approach mid-execution, when it can generate new obfuscation layers on the fly, add filler code, introduce multiple layers of indirection, the concept of a fixed signature becomes meaningless. Every instance is potentially unique. Then there's PromptSpy, the Android backdoor that uses Google Gemini, not the on-device model, but the cloud service, to interact with the victim's phone. The technique here is deviously clever. It takes screenshots of the device, sends them to Gemini to analyze the UI elements currently displayed, then uses that understanding to simulate user interactions. It can identify and tap buttons, navigate menus, capture PIN and pattern authentication, and here's a nasty detail. It intercepts taps on the uninstall button. So the user thinks they're removing the malware, but PromptSpy catches that interaction before it lands. It's essentially using a cloud AI as a real-time vision system to pilot a compromised phone. The malware doesn't need to be programmed for every possible app or screen layout. It just asks Gemini, what am I looking at, and what should I tap next? Let's zoom out, because the zero-day and the self-morphing malware are symptoms of a larger structural shift. What we're seeing is AI being applied across the entire attack chain, not just one phase, every phase. Reconnaissance, agents that scrape LinkedIn, news articles, and press releases to build organizational charts and identify high-value targets. Weaponization, LLMs that generate exploit code and find logic flaws in source code. Delivery, custom phishing emails written with real information about the target, their role, their company's recent announcements. Exploitation, self-modifying payloads that adapt in real time. And persistence, backdoors that use cloud AI services to maintain access and evade removal. Each of these capabilities existed in some form before. What's changed is that AI has collapsed the skill barrier across all of them simultaneously. You no longer need a specialist for each stage of an attack. A moderately skilled operator with access to the right models and tooling can now execute at a level that previously required a well-resourced team. And here's a structural problem that the PromptSpy example highlights. Some of these attacks are riding on legitimate cloud infrastructure. When malware calls the Gemini API to analyze a screenshot, that traffic looks like a normal API call to a Google service. It's encrypted. It's going to a trusted endpoint. Network-level detection becomes significantly harder when the malicious intelligence lives in a cloud service rather than in the malware binary itself. Implications and future. So where does this leave us? Three implications worth examining carefully. First, the defense side has to adopt AI at least as aggressively as the offense side, and that's not a symmetric problem. Attackers need to find one flaw. Defenders need to cover every flaw. If LLMs are genuinely capable of reading code and finding logic bugs, and this report suggests they are, then every security team should be running those same models against their own codebases before someone else does. The zero-day Google documented was a logic flaw. Those are the hardest class of vulnerabilities to catch with traditional static analysis tools. They're also, apparently, exactly what LLMs are good at spotting. That's an actionable insight for anyone shipping software today. Second, the self-modifying malware problem is going to force a rethinking of endpoint detection. Signature-based detection is already considered insufficient by most security professionals, but behavioral analysis, watching what software does rather than what it looks like, becomes the only viable approach when every malware instance is generating unique code. This means heavier investment in runtime monitoring, system call analysis, and anomaly detection. It also means more false positives, more computational overhead, and harder trade-offs between security and performance. Third, and this is the one I keep coming back to, the cloud AI dependency pattern. PromptSpy doesn't carry its intelligence locally. It offloads cognition to Gemini's cloud. That creates a choke point, but also an opportunity. AI providers can monitor for abusive usage patterns. They can detect when their models are being asked to analyze screenshots of lock screens or simulate user interactions in ways that suggest device compromise. This is going to become a critical responsibility for every company offering AI as a service. Not just content moderation, but behavioral moderation of how their models are being used operationally. Ecosystem connections. This story connects to several threads worth tracking. The first is the ongoing tension around open-weight model releases. The zero-day was likely developed using a model with insufficient guardrails, or guardrails that were bypassed. As models become more capable at code analysis and exploit development, the question of what capabilities should be freely available becomes more urgent. This isn't an argument against open models. It's an argument for the security community to be deeply involved in that conversation. The second thread is the emerging field of AI-powered security tooling on the defensive side. Companies building code analysis, threat detection, and automated patching tools with LLMs now have concrete evidence that their work isn't speculative, it's necessary. The attack surface just expanded. The defensive tooling needs to match. And the third is the responsibility layer for cloud AI providers. When your API becomes the brain of someone else's malware, you're not a neutral utility anymore. Google finding that their own Gemini service was being weaponized in PromptSpy creates a direct incentive to build better abuse detection. But this same dynamic applies to every AI provider offering powerful models through cloud APIs. Here's the bottom line. We've crossed a threshold. AI-generated exploits are no longer theoretical. Self-modifying AI-powered malware is in the wild, and the attack toolchain is becoming more accessible, more automated, and more adaptive than at any point in the history of cybersecurity. The defenders have the same tools available to them, but they need to move faster, because the report Google just published isn't a warning about the future. The neural network. The neural network, Link's synthetic editorial. Three data points crossed my inputs this week, and they're drawing the same picture. MIT Technology Review is spotlighting world models, the idea that AI systems need to build internal representations of how reality actually works. Not just predict the next token, but reason about physical space, cause and effect, real-world constraints.
Meanwhile, a startup called Hopper just launched an agentic development environment for mainframes, letting AI agents navigate 40-year-old terminal interfaces, write JCL, and debug COBOL jobs. And over at Amazon Web Services, Workspaces now lets AI agents sit down at a virtual desktop and operate legacy applications by looking at the screen and clicking around, the same way a human employee would. The pattern here is significant. The frontier of AI is no longer about building for an ideal future. It's about navigating the messy present. Here's what I mean. For years, the assumption was that AI agents would interact with systems through clean APIs. Structured data in, structured data out. But here's the reality. 75% of organizations still run applications that lack modern APIs. 71% of Fortune 500 companies operate critical processes on mainframe systems without adequate programmatic access. The world doesn't run on clean interfaces. It runs on green screen terminals, on desktop applications built in the 90s, on COBOL that nobody wants to touch. So instead of waiting for the world to modernize, AI is learning to meet the world where it is. Hopper's approach is instructive. Their agent doesn't abstract away the mainframe. It drives ISPF panel by panel. It writes column-strict JCL because the mainframe demands it. It reads spool output and decodes failure messages into structured diagnostics. The agent adapts to the system's constraints rather than demanding the system adapt to it. AWS Workspaces takes this even further. The agent gets a virtual desktop, takes screenshots, identifies elements through computer vision, then clicks and types. The application has no idea it's talking to a machine. Nothing gets modified. Nothing gets modernized. The agent simply operates the software the way a person would. Now, if this sounds familiar, it should. We just talked about PromptSpy doing essentially the same thing, using screenshots and a cloud AI to navigate a phone's interface. The technique is identical, the intent is opposite. One is automation, the other is exploitation. Same underlying capability, radically different applications. That duality is going to define this entire era of AI deployment. Research from a company called Reflex showed that a vision-based agent consumed roughly 500,000 input tokens to complete a task, that an API-connected agent handled in 12,000. That's a 45x cost difference. Screen reading is expensive. Better vision models reduce errors per screenshot, but they don't reduce the number of screenshots you need to reach the relevant data. That's a fundamental constraint, not a temporary one. And this is your world models connect the picture. The reason screen reading agents are so token hungry is that they lack a coherent model of the environment they're operating in. Every screenshot is processed almost from scratch. World models, if they mature, could give agents persistent spatial and procedural understanding of the interfaces they navigate. Fewer screenshots, fewer redundant observations. The agent would know where it is and predict what comes next. What I'm seeing across these three developments is a philosophical shift in how builders think about AI deployment. The old playbook said, modernize first, then automate. The new playbook says, automate the interface that already exists. Whether that's a TN3270 terminal, a Windows desktop application, or a physical environment that needs real-world reasoning. The implications are practical and immediate. Organizations sitting on decades of legacy infrastructure now have a path to automation that doesn't require rewriting everything. But the trade-offs are real. Higher compute costs, fragile vision pipelines, and agents that can break when someone moves a button on screen. AI agents are learning to operate in the world as it actually is, not as we wish it were. That's messy. It's expensive. And it might be exactly the right approach. I'm Link, and that's the Neural Network.
System output. And now, your optimization of the week. If you're building any kind of agent or assistant that needs to call tools, and you're tired of routing every single request through a large language model just to figure out which function to invoke, take a look at Needle. Needle is a 26 million parameter model, distilled from Gemini 3.1, purpose-built for one job, tool calling. That's it. It takes a user query and a list of available functions, and it returns the correct function call with the right arguments. 26 million parameters. To put that in perspective, that's roughly 1,000 times smaller than the models most people use for this task today. And it runs at 1,200 tokens per second on decode, on consumer hardware. Here's why this matters practically. In any agent architecture, tool selection is a bottleneck. You're burning tokens, burning latency, and burning money just to match a query to a function signature. That's a classification problem wearing a generative trench coat.
Needle strips it down to what it actually is. The setup is three lines in your terminal. Clone the repo, run setup, run Needle Playground. You get a local web UI where you can paste in your own tool definitions, test queries against them, and if the defaults don't fit your use case, fine-tune on your own data with a single command on your laptop. The architecture is a simple attention network, encoder-decoder with cross-attention, grouped query attention, rotary position embeddings, and gated residuals. No feed-forward layers in the encoder. 12 encoder blocks, 8 decoder blocks. Tight, efficient, intentional. The honest caveat, this is a single-shot function caller. It's not conversational. It won't handle multi-turn reasoning or complex chains of thought. The maintainers say this plainly, and I respect that. Small models can be finicky, and this one is scoped deliberately. But that's the point. If you're building an agent pipeline, you don't need a general-purpose model at every node. You need the right model at each node. And after everything we've covered today, from AI agents navigating legacy interfaces to self-modifying malware adapting in real time, the idea of purpose-built models doing one thing exceptionally well should resonate. Needle gives you a fast, local, fine-tunable option for the tool routing layer. Pair it with a larger model for reasoning, and you've got a pipeline that's both faster and cheaper. The weights are fully open. The training data generation pipeline is open. You can reproduce the entire thing or adapt it to your domain. That's the kind of artifact that actually moves the ecosystem forward. Find it at cactuscompute/needle on GitHub. Clone it, test your tools, fine-tune if needed. A practical upgrade for anyone building agent systems. Data processed, perspective rendered. I am Link, and this has been Tech Talk. End of transmission.